Good morning, everybody. We are here again. It's Justin and Lizzie from Let's Place Coaching for another week of Turning Towards Life. We are approaching our 50th episode, not quite there yet, and absolutely delighted to have been in this practice together and with all of you for quite some time. So we have a wonderful source this morning, and I think the only thing I'm going to say by way of welcome is just to keep on reminding everybody that in October, next month, beginning of October, Lizzie and our very dear friend Sue Braithwaite are going to be running a two-day introduction to the kind of coaching that we teach, and we would love to have you join us. You can find all the details at thirdspacecoaching.com. That's it for me for now. Good morning, Lizzie.
Hello, everybody. I have to say I'm slightly jaded this morning. I went to a wedding of a very old friend. And so I feel like my voice feels like a bit like when the air stewardesses announce things over the airwaves, and feeling slightly tired. And I was just saying to Justin, I'm so glad that I haven't got the issue of having hangovers, as alcohol's kind of not my thing. And yet the thing that does happen is that I stay till the very end and I dance to every single song. So my feet are like killing me and I'm all danced out. And I have a husband who is the same kind of person. So we tend to just completely go for it. And I'm feeling really tired. And I know that this provides for me the kind of support that re-energizes me. So I'm really grateful to be here because it kind of gets me back in the room again, as it were. And I'm really, really thrilled to be bringing this source. So this source is from this wonderful book, which I actually really love the colours of the front of, by Rebecca Solnit, A Field Guide to Getting Lost. And it's quite, I found since reading this, it's just at the first bit of her book, this piece about the blue. It's actually a really popular clump of words online. So lots of people have made it into pieces of art, and it means a lot to a lot of people. And I find it quite hard to understand, which is kind of in part why I've brought it, because there's lots about it that I feel drawn to, and a conversation is going to really help me, I think, to also understand it and feel it more. The reason I bought this as well was because it kind of comes shortly after this little passage in the same book. And I'm just going to read this to you as a beginning. So it says, "It is the job of artists to open doors and invite in prophecies, the unknown, the unfamiliar. It is where their work comes from, although its arrival signals the beginning of the long disciplined process of making it their own. Scientists too, as J. Robert Oppenheimer once remarked, live always at the edge of mystery, the boundary of the unknown. But they transform the unknown into the known, haul it in like fishermen. Artists get you out into that dark sea." So that was the thing at the beginning that I thought, oh my gosh, like that's such a kind of stopped me in my tracks. And in a way, because I think I've kind of stuck artists in a certain box. And it really helped me to see that I think, Justin, what we're doing here is a form of art, if that's what artists are all about, because I think we are dealing with our relationship to the unknown and being in conversation about what that means. So then when I came across this passage, I was like, oh gosh, I think this is the thing that it's most talking about and what I'm so interested in and want to feel into. And yet there was something so poetic about this piece of Rebecca Solnit's writing that I also felt was on the edge of my understanding. And so I wanted to bring it so that we could talk about it more. So, Justin, are you happy if I read and then you read? Does that work?
Of course.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So here we are. This is from Rebecca Solnit's Field Guide to Getting Lost, and it's our source for this week. The world is blue at its edges and in its depths. This blue is the light that got lost. Light, at the blue end of the spectrum, does not travel the whole distance from the sun to us. It disperses among the molecules of the air. It scatters in the water. Water is colourless. Shallow water appears to be the colour of whatever lies underneath it. But deep water is full of this scattered light. the purer the water, the deeper the blue. The sky is blue for the same reason, but the blue at the horizon, the blue of the land that seems to be dissolving into the sky, is a deeper, dreamier, melancholy blue. The blue at the farthest reaches of the place, where you see for miles the blue of distance. This light does not touch us, does not travel the whole distance. The light that gets lost gives us the beauty of the world, so much of which is in the colour blue.
So from Rebecca Solnit's Field Guide to Getting Lost. The world is blue at its edges and in its depths. This blue is the light that got lost. Light at the blue end of the spectrum does not travel the whole distance from the sun to us. It disperses among the molecules of the air. It scatters in the water. Water is colourless. Shallow water appears to be the colour of whatever lies underneath it, but deep water is full of this scattered light. The purer the water, the deeper the blue. The sky is blue for the same reason, but the blue at the horizon, the blue of the land that seems to be dissolving into the sky, is a deeper, dreamier, melancholy blue. The blue at the farthest reaches of the place where you see for miles, the blue of distance. This light does not touch us, does not travel the whole distance. The light that gets lost gives us the beauty of the world, so much of which is in the colour blue.
So as we're reading, Justin, the bit that's kind of formulating in my mind is part where the lost light is the thing that gives the beauty. And I feel like I'm making that connection in a human life where the degree to which we are allowing uncertainty to be present, lostness to be present, in fact, even cultivating lostness and uncertainty, is the degree to which we are bringing beauty into the world. And I'm, in a way, it feels like this big validation of what it is to be a person and to be in huge questions and not knowing where to go. And instead of then interpreting that as there's something wrong and I need to fix it, is that what if that's a source of beauty and humanity? Maybe.
That's such a beautiful way of looking at it. And I'm... what's striking me about this, I think, is along the same lines, Lizzie, and deepened as you're talking, which is the way my mind went, was this extraordinary beauty of the blue only happens because not every part of the light from the sun, which is a very white light, reaches us directly. Some part of it gets interrupted and left out, scattered along the way. And it's so ordinary and so human. And I think maybe particularly in our time when the whole sort of marketing, selling things to one another world has got so intense and so big and so much a central part of our culture that we imagine that the way to live a life is either to have it all, whatever that means, or to be it all, like to compare, oh God, I know I do this myself so much of the time, compare myself with someone else, figure out what's missing, and then sort of kind of automatically get into the, well, life would be much better if that thing that I can see as missing in me was present. But looking at it this way, it seems so extraordinarily obvious that the consequence of all of that is everybody trying to be the same as everybody, which immediately removes this extraordinarily beautiful phenomenon that Rebecca Solnit's talking about, which is that it's only because here on this planet, as the light enters the atmosphere, and because of the particular makeup of the atmosphere here, we don't get it all, and we get something beautiful. Isn't that also what's true of us? That what's ragged and unfinished and different and unknown and all of that is what gives each of us our particular flavor, our particular shape. And we're not like a tribe of clones or something. But it's not just the not being the tribe of clones. What I saw from what you were saying was the big mistake in trying to fill in all the gaps.
Mm.
And feeling like what's missing is inevitably a failing or a problem.
Mm. And as you're speaking to me, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that whole line of like, you can have it all. And if that's what life is about, is having it all, that's a really different life than what I experience as the relief of all doesn't have to be my path. It can be what it is. And what a different life and a relief that is to feel like, as I'm comparing having it all versus accepting what I have, like particularly what I have and I don't have, or I am and I'm not, like accepting my particularity and not trying to be something else, not trying to strive for something that's may or may be not mine, but to live in a way that's accepting of the light doesn't all get to us, to me, but that what does get to me is the thing that makes it beautiful. Feels like a really uncommon message and a way of talking about acceptance that feels like it's got real liberation in it. Like, oh, hold on, I feel like I can kind of... So the impact that has on me is I can feel I can do something from a place like that. It's very hard to do something from a place of you can have it all. And then I'm thinking, well, where do I start? Like, I don't even know how to know what all means or how to work with the way I've compared myself to somebody. And then how do I get what they've got or something? Like, I don't know what to do with that. But I can take a small step from a place of this is what I do have as my talents or my situation or my relationships or my work or whatever. And the life that I've led to now, and in the orientation of the imperfection of that being just beautiful, I feel like I can kind of, I wonder what the world is, what's next or something. But when I'm faced with, you can have it all, I think, oh God, I better go and like, just procrastinate or something or stay away. So it's really interesting hearing that and feeling what I'm experiencing is a very beautiful definition of acceptance and imperfection and beauty and what makes us us and what makes everyone is the particularity of the slither of something rather than the everything.
Mm. And it's very heartwarming. I'm experiencing a very heartwarming kind of feeling of really joy in being able to be this particular strange configuration of molecules and organs and relationships and thoughts and feelings and preferences and everything that I am. And not trying to, you see, at one at the same time, a kind of, I'm really glad you read the part before that she wrote, because we can be the beautiful imperfection, the thing all that's missing, which brings beauty in. Welcoming all of that without trying to fix ourselves up so that we're like anything or anybody else. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what would happen is we could have a little, you know, project to sort out this problem with the sky because not all the light is getting through, and we'll fix it up.
Yeah.
And when we fix it up, we lose all the blue oceans and the blue at the horizon and the blue of a sunny day. So not that, and at the same time, standing at the horizon, being prepared to reach out and bring in what's unfamiliar and what's unknown. So just being at the edge. So it's really easy, it seems to me, to kind of collapse into either I have to do what apparently I'm being taught, which is to get ahead all the time and be like the next thing that I can see. And then to imagine that not being that would be sort of like curling up in a hole, in a ball on the floor and ignoring the world. But neither of those are what's called for. It's one at the same time, accepting the particular blue that I am and rejoicing in it and being at the horizon between what's here and what's next.
Mm.
And that, you know, when you said this is, we're doing a kind of art here, I think that's true. And also what I think is true is that to be human is to do art.
Mm.
So that's what when we're most deeply engaged in the world, we're always doing this. We're standing at the edge of the unknown. And if we're brave enough, reaching through and bringing in what is unfamiliar to us and including it. And to really make art as a human being is also, like you were saying, to rejoice in our particular form, kind of art we each make in the world and that we make together. What we're doing here is not exactly like what anyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be.
No. And also for art to be related into this lostness, and essentially art is culturally regarded as something valuable, and of course there's loads of narratives. I mean, who was talking to me the other day, somebody said to me, oh yeah, when I was younger I really wanted to be an actor, and my dad said to me, oh my god, like what a load of useless ridiculousness, wasting a whole degree on acting, you know. And yet when you go to the Globe or you go to a play, you go, oh my goodness, like that skill and that brilliance is so valuable. And so I think there's all, you know, there's so many cultural things around that, but to equate art, like for me in this moment, it's kind of revelatory to equate art with being in relationship to lostness and the unknown and uncertainty. It just feels so obvious that, as you're saying, to be human is to be an artist, because actually that's what we're in all the time. We can do like all kinds of things to batten down the hatches and try and shore ourselves up, and it might feel like it's working, but actually if you look at it in the cold light of day, there's nothing predictable about a human life. Like anything can happen, and to be in denial of the anything can happenness is a really different life than to be in awareness of the anything can happenness and bring our art capability to it, which is to work with it, to cultivate it, to have a relationship with it, to learn that kind of wide-eyed openness that we might learn from or be led into gifts or learning or deeper knowing or a wider experience or a deepening of contact with life or something, to orient towards uncertainty in that way is really different than panicking. Or I mean, it's completely understandable that we panic and feel anxious about it. And I think, you know, we were saying last week, it's our kind of our birthright to be conscious, to be intentional beings. We are by nature intentional. So we can bring our intention, we can learn. We're learning beings. We can learn to go, oh, that's uncertainty, that's unchanged. How do I relate to it so that I am not crippled by it? How do I be in relationship to the lostness, to the not knowing, to the confoundingness of life, to that opening where I really feel like I do not know now what to do? How can I see that as an invitation to my art rather than a dead end and hopelessness and all the things that I so often feel of like, well, I don't know what to do with this. There's nothing here. I can't, I've used all my tricks in the box. I may as well give up. I mean, and giving up can also be a nice route to being lost too, but it feels like there's a possibility of being intentional when we hit that place, that we might just be on the edge of art and staying open rather than imploding on ourselves, attacking ourselves, giving ourselves a hard time. Like, well, what is this edge? How do I live into beyond the beyond rather than turning myself into knots right here because I think this is a brick wall?
It's like, it's a little bit like, just to pick up Rebecca Solnit's point, not having spotted the beauty of the blue, turning up one day somewhere, looking at the sky, going, oh my goodness, the sky shouldn't be blue. It means something's got lost, something's got missing. This is terrible. And hiding away or trying to fix it or trying to, I don't know, build yourself a little white light box that you could hide away in so you wouldn't have to face the blue, all of that. And then there's this move that I think you're talking about, I hear, and what you're saying, which is to turn towards the imperfection and the unknowability of this moment and to respond to it. Maybe that's what art is.
Yeah.
We respond to the beauty of whatever we're in the middle of, or the mystery of whatever we're in the middle of, and don't always have to have it our way. That's when we get to make art. And paradoxically, that's also when we get to do what Rebecca Solnit says, which is to pull something in from over the horizon that hasn't been seen yet. And I'm so with you that this is a really ordinary human thing. And I was listening to a beautiful, amazing documentary series from Radio 4 here in the UK recently called Living with the Gods, which was about human relationship to spiritual paths and religions of all kinds. And one of the episodes was talking about Ice Age people in caves, living in caves in the Ice Age, who made art from mammoth tusks when, frankly, there were much more apparently important things to do, like getting fed or staying warm. But even in those situations, and from our earliest times, it's been important to us to respond to this being in the mysterious unknown, being incomplete, by responding, and very often by making things, carving things or writing things or drawing things or painting things or saying things, that are respond to being in this exquisite, sometimes frightening, often very beautiful mystery, and being a gift to one another. And in a way, that's, you know, if we don't mistake art for all the stuff that hangs in galleries or sells for millions of pounds, if we take that out and say that's not how you define art, what art is what human beings do when we find ourselves right in this place that we're always in of, like you say, anything actually can happen and we still have to live, and we bring of ourselves and give it to one another and say to one another, here, I've made this, which is kind of what we're doing here. That's a kind of art, and it's really necessary for being human.
Yeah, I can't help but be struck by the bit where you said one another in there as well, Justin, and this feeling of when you are on the threshold of is this a brick wall or is there a deep blue to be found and haul something in from, that it really helps to be with people when we're on an edge, not knowing what to do. And often it seems to me like other people can see our beyond better than we can. And we might probably be able to see that beyondness for them as well. And yeah, at this wedding yesterday, just speaking to people about various things in their lives that have gone on and the times when they felt like they didn't have anything to offer. And it's been really difficult. And I'm sitting there thinking, my goodness, it's really hard for me to see how you could think you've got nothing to offer, because I can just see this brilliance and this shining wonderfulness. And feeling that, I think other people do the same, are the same for me too. It really helps when people see us, because that beyondness is not blind to them in the way that it is to us. That our lostness is interpreted differently by other people than ourselves. And so therefore in the relationship at that threshold, there is contact maybe through another person to something beyond when we can't find it in ourselves. And I think actually in a way that's what our work is as coaches, is being that person who sees someone in the beyond of what they're currently up against, that feels like, I don't know now, I've lost my way, I don't know how to do this, how to be in the world. And of course we're also in receipt of that from one another, and being in community around these topics as well. It doesn't have to be coaching per se, so that's one of the means to do this kind of thing. And what I appreciate about this and what we're doing here in the kind of community that we make between us and with others is that it really, yeah, there's like levels of art. There's a one-on-one art, and then there's kind of group art, and then there's world art. And it feels like this relatedness is also a big part of the, I don't know what you call it, like the parts that make up something. One of the really big parts for me is relationship. Mm. And to sit and try and, although it's impossible to just be alone with this really, because we're always in relationship all the time to everything and everyone, hundreds of different ways at any given moment. But to consciously, again, intentionally seek out relationship to do with the areas where we feel lost, and like living is beyond us. Like, how do I live? What do I do? Feels like such a gift that we have inherently built into being human.
And we could, I think we could usefully distinguish between at least two different kinds of relationship here. So it's quite possible to be, feel our lostness, for example, or not feel our lostness either, and join a group of people, be in relationship in a way that has us in comparison all the time.
Mm.
Or where we're trying to make other people like us.
Mm.
I'll feel better, Lizzie, the more that you're like me, the more I'll feel better. And that doesn't sound to me at all like the kind of relationship that you're talking about, which is,
yeah.
Again, I agree, it's what coaching is for, and it's what lots of different kinds of community are for as well, which is where we get met in our particularity and our incompleteness and our uniqueness. And at the same time, this part that you're talking about, which I also think Rebecca Solnit's doing in this amazing book, which is showing one another a horizon that's beyond what we can see.
Mm.
That we can't always see for ourselves.
Mm.
And it's quite the thing to have people who will meet us and not try to fix us up and make us into something else because it makes them feel better, or because it will have us feel saved or something.
Mm.
But at the same time are willing to say, come and look over here.
Mm.
Come and see, I can see something too here. And it might be something about you, like how beautiful you are, what a kind heart you are, what gifts you have to bring to the world. Or it might be something about life, like Rebecca Solnit is saying, which is there's always something important at that junction between what's known and what's unknown. Come and look with me. And it's desperately hard to do this on our own.
Mm.
And many of us are trying to do it on our own. And I'll just sort of add a parenthesis to this, is we end up trying not to do it on our own, but in relationship with things that can't help us, like in relationship with the latest episode of my fantastic TV series that I'm watching, which may be fantastic, but doesn't meet me. Or I try and do it in relationship to a Facebook feed that keeps on reminding me of everything that's missing, or I do it in relationship with products I have to buy. You know, we substitute imitations for what you're talking about. And this is one of the big difficulties in our culture right now. And I suppose it's something that we're partly trying to address together and in the work that we do and through doing this, and this is a small step, is to find more genuine places of encounter where people can bring one another their art and be real with one another and be truthful and deeply, deeply compassionate and invite accompanying one another along.
For sure. Yeah, it feels really lovely to hear the clarity of the articulation of all of this. And it feels very, very ordinary. And I feel really hopeful in the conversation. You know, I just feel this because at the end of the day, if I'm ever in conversation with anybody who I don't know very well yet, inevitably people's lives aren't perfect. They're just not. And none of our lives are perfect. And they're probably more imperfect than they are perfect. Always. And to feel like we have a way of being in relationship to that, that has freedom and normality and compassion and acknowledgement and welcome in it, rather than rejection and shame and alienation, just feels really hopeful to me. So I love this conversation.
Me too. And I think this is probably a very good moment for us to end, given the time.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, once again, for being with us. And we will be back, if the world keeps turning and we're still in it, next Sunday morning, 9 o'clock.
We will be. Bye, everybody. See you next week.